guarding Curry. Curry spins him across a couple of times. Now crossover behind the back, bounce pass to Payton. Payton goes in for a jam and got fouled. They tried the double step at the top of the key. Payton released and Cornette was a step late. And GP2 is a problem right now for Boston.
Hey, Dub Nation, it's GP2 here. Willard and Dibs is live on YouTube and Twitch right now. Time for you to like and subscribe.
Well, that was nice of him.
Yeah.
And that man looks healthy. That's my number one super fancy take about GP2 so far this year. That man looks healthy.
That man looks feisty.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean that in the best possible way.
Everything is fitting like a glove, and we're so thrilled right now on the River Islands guest line is to go out to Cleveland, where the Warriors have just landed. And GP2 joins us now live on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Thanks for doing it, Gary. And yeah, you look healthy. What's your response to that?
What's up, fellas? Thanks for having me. But now, yeah, it's just that was the key emphasis on my summer this year, was just getting out of the year healthy. I had a sprained calf or something like that. I cleaned that up, and then after that, it was just try to bulletproof it and just get faster, stronger, throughout the summer, and I'm staying on it and keeping everything up to par.
Yeah, and you look better than just par, and right now the team in general looks phenomenal, 7-1. What do you make of this start, Gary, and what do you attribute it to? Because Mark and I were talking about, like, how is this all happening? What do you think has been working for you guys so far?
We got a lot of guys that can play basketball and play very at a high level. All our young guys are, they've been playing at a high level for a year about now, so everything's starting to come around. Moses Moody's, settling into his role. Jonathan's settling into, potentially his superstar breakout type role. So, added the pieces, K.A. And D'Anthony Melton, everybody's come in. We got, 12 guys essentially that we can, Steve's comfortable with everybody. And I think everything right now is just, we're just flowing right now. It's a nice little gel we have.
Gary, you just mentioned it, and Melton may play tomorrow or Sunday. We'll see. Like, can this 12-man rotation sustain? Can you guys do that all year long?
I don't see why not. Of course, injuries and whatnot's going to happen, but I think so. Everybody's buying in, and it can be somebody's night every night, somebody different night every night. So, there's not one guy. I'm sure we have another guy to come in and make plays and, just play basketball the right way.
Last night was your night. I mean, many nights have been your night, but last night you came in and you had such great contributions. What was it about last night and the matchups that made you so comfortable and had you play so well at Boston?
We're kind of familiar with that arena and those guys. So, we know what they like to do and how they like to switch on and whatever they like to do defensively. So, I'm just being myself. Go up there. They put the big guy on me. I'm probably going to go set a screen and dive, and try to be a playmaker in there. And with the pieces I have around me, it makes it that much easier and, that much exciting to go out there and, have a good game. It was two top teams, and we had fun.
GP2 is with us here on Willard and Dibs, 95.7 The Game in Cleveland, where the team will play tomorrow night in a game that you'll hear right here on 95.7 The Game. Gary, what did it mean to you? I don't want to diminish any of the other teams you've played so far, but you guys know what people were saying. It's like a measuring stick game. So what did it mean to you guys to get a win like that that's a little more high profile?
It was good. We knew the back of this road trip was three of the best teams in the league, and we knew that coming in. So kind of got out of the early road trip. Could have cleaned up a lot of stuff. Had a little scary moment in Houston, so we learned from that and came out. And we knew if we had anything like that in Houston, we were gonna get beat. So this was a good test for us, and I know Boston was going to bring out the best of us, and we was going to bring out the best of Boston, so it was going to be a good clash, and we got two more to go with some young teams. So, it's another test for us, to see where we're at right now.
What's the vibe been like in the locker room? Because Mark and I were talking about expectations, and, you're already a champ, and Steph and Dre have four, and so yeah, you want to always be a champion, but does it feel a little bit less pressurized knowing that you've already got one? And also maybe the fact that most people don't think that you guys are going to be that good anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You know, couple years ago, you know, they didn't think that, you know, we had what it take or we was going to be that good, and turned out, you know, doing what we did. But I think now it's a good chemistry. We have a good vibe in the locker room. It kind of does feel like that a couple years ago. But we just got guys that, you know, buy in and, you know, want to do it the right way and unselfishness. And, you know, they just want to win. And I think if we keep having that mindset and keep buying into what Stack and Terry and the staff is, you know, trying to do for us with this 12-man rotation, I think it'll be very good for us down the stretch.
Gary, you always represent defense, so I really want to ask you this. Last year, not a very good defensive team. So far this year, a very good defensive team. It can't just be because Steve told you to be better. Like, what happened here? Why are you guys so much better on defense?
Yeah, we got intelligent players, like I said, Adden, D. Melt, and Kyle Anderson. You know, those are two, especially D. Melt, RA, defensive-minded, very smart player. And, you know, two-way, he can get going offensively, and K.A. he's like a little wizard out there, you know, with his speed and how he uses it and how he's affecting the game. It's just crazy. And we got Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga. We have so many different lineups that we can go. You know, and guys just want to get out there and make the right plays and win. So I think we've got a group of guys like that with how many number of guys we have like that. You know, it's going to be tough. You get to see different matchups, so you can't really game plan. But you can just hope, you know, that we have a bad day.
And so far, no bad days. And I do have to ask you about what's being referred to as Dunkgate after last night. And, you know, you go about 6'2 and change, and you dunk all the time, reverse, front ways, whatnot. And Wiggins goes up for a layup and doesn't dunk it. And you in the post game even mentioned, like, you know, Wiggs has to dunk the ball a little bit. Do you guys give him some a little bit of a hard time in the post game after he missed that open layup?
No, I don't think it's a little. It's a little bit. I think we give him hard time all the time. But no, Wiggs, no, we're gonna finish those in transition. But you know, Wiggs is Wiggs, and I know he's gonna get his bounce. He's got his bounce. So I heard that he kind of slipped yesterday. So we're gonna let that one slide. But for sure, the rest of these, we gonna need him to dunk them.
While we're on the topic of dunks, Gary, our producer Lucas Alexander is itching to ask you a dunk question. I'm going to throw it over to Lucas.
Gary, it's Lucas. Hey, pleasure talking to you. I've noticed that even when you're wide open going for dunks, you love to do reverse dunks, coming down, cutting down the baseline. Why? It seems like 90% of your dunks are reverse. What's the deal with that?
It's a good question. That's a good question. Dunk in reverse, I can actually scan the floor and see where my matchup is, and as soon as I get dunk it, I can go to my matchup. So it's probably just me scanning. It's easier for me to scan and go pick up my matchup on the way back.
Gary, was it actually a good question, or were you just being nice because it was Lucas jumping in?
No, that's a good question.
Okay. All right. I'll just check it.
Well, you know, that counts for something on our show
it
now,
does,
Gary.
Yeah.
You just gave him the biggest compliment that can be paid on this program.
He's like celebrating in the other room right now.
No, that was a great question. Great question.
All right, well,
now you're piling on.
Yeah, here's my silly, playful question. I saw the pregame, and I don't even know what to call it, when you guys get in a circle and you're kind of doing the soccer thing where you can't use your hands and you're only using your head and your feet, and you were doing it with Jonathan Kuminga and Gui Santos, two guys from different countries where soccer is a much, much bigger deal maybe than it might be here in America. That feels intimidating. What allowed you to get into that circle, Gary?
No, we all have the same passion for football. So, you know, that's our little way to, you know, just to get back to the game, have some fun with it. We watch soccer all the time. So those are my guys. And, you know, we try to have fun right before the game with it. And, hopefully get a bucket out of it.
Who's your team, Gary, when you watch soccer?
Bayern Munich. From Germany. Germany team, Bayern Munich. I've been watching them since South Africa, I think 2014. That's when I probably got into soccer. So since 2014, and it's been all fledged, and I try to get to as many matches as I can.
What made you select them?
The team that they had at the time, they had Frank Ribery, Aaron Rodgers, Thomas Mueller. They were just a feisty team. They were pretty much a bullying, you know, the whole soccer world. And I just liked how they played, you know, just fearless, fast, get stops, and they go the other way and put pressure on you. So, you know, I kind of just fell into that style of play. And ever since then, I've been rocking with them.
I can see you as a Ribery fan just based on the way he plays with that scar under his eye and the rugged nature.
Just chirpy, yeah. And it was just fun watching their style of play.
GP2, yep, at the hotel. Hey, Gary, leave us with this. How do you feel about this team versus how you felt about it when you were in camp? Wow.
Gary, did we lose you?
Did we lose him?
You got me?
Yeah,
now we got you.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you hear the question?
Yeah, I got you. I think we definitely grown from camp in Hawaii. We had a pretty good preseason, but we still knew in preseason games that we still needed to clean up a lot of things and get our defense right and rotation and our sail and everything's right. And I think we're still doing that now. It's just every game, you know, the top of competition, the play level of competition, I think it's just going to continue to rise, and we're going to just keep getting better, and it's going to force us to, you know, lock down and lock in and, you know, and have each other's back. So I think every game right now for us is just huge for us and with our chemistry, and, you know, we're just continuing to build.
Gary, thanks for hopping on, man. Go get him tomorrow night.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep. Appreciate you, GP2 on 95.7 The Game.
Always good.
Yeah, now we got you primed and in a good mood for Greg Cosell to come in here and dunk on you.
I'm not afraid.
I know you're not afraid.
Bring it, Cosell, on a bye week. I got questions. I'm going to come after him today.
All right, so the difference between a Christian McCaffrey offense and maybe any of the other offenses, much more. Our weekly visit with Greg Cosell is coming up next. We're sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. This is Willard and Dibbs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs.
It's a great question.
Wow, that's a great question.
That's a great question.
That's a great question.
And that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
All right, we're going to try again. We're going to try for more great questions. We do it every week with Greg Cosell, and he was kind enough to move from yesterday to today because we had such a short show with the Warriors game on the East Coast last night. So we're going to go out to the River Islands guest line here in just a second and talk to Greg. I do want to mention, just to put a bow on the conversation with GP2, the Warriors tell us, guess what, Dubs fans? There are still tickets available for Klay's return on Tuesday night.
Wow.
So all you got to do is go to warriors.com. And you can be in the building. And again, I'll mention what they've told us. They think they've got the coolest tribute to a returning player in the history of the sport. So you can be there to see it. Warriors.com. There are tickets available. Mavs and Warriors next Tuesday night. Plus, you and I will be out in the plaza, so you can come say hi to us.
Yeah, and we're doing a whole Klay carnival out there as well. So come on out to the plaza, and maybe you could win some tchotchkes, some prizes.
Maybe you can. Or maybe you'll just hang out and listen to conversations like the one we're about to have with Greg Cosell, senior producer, NFL Films. Let's talk about Niners and more. Hey, Greg, how you doing this week?
Gentlemen, how are you?
We are fantastic because it sounds to us like Christian McCaffrey's going to play football this weekend, Greg. We don't know yet, but that's the drumbeat, and that's my first question. Through your eyes and watching tape, how different is or how much more open is the playbook for Kyle Shanahan when Christian is in versus out?
Oh, I think it's significantly more open. I think it starts with the pre-snap movement. There'll be a lot more. I mean, they're a high-motion offense to begin with, but I think with McCaffrey you can do even more. And then just simply the fact that the run game is better because he's, you know, a great runner. So I think there's, and the pass game element, obviously. So with the motion and the pass game element, I think there's a much broader playbook for sure.
when you look at the film, when he's on the field and Debo's there and McCaffrey and you got Juszczyk as well, what are the different ways that they use him that makes it so tough on defenses?
Well, you know, the first thing a defense tries to do is to identify where people are and identify formation, and then they decide, okay, this is the way we practice to play against, you know, certain formations. And then when there's movement, what that does to a defense is they usually have a response based on their practice all week, a response to motion. Some teams don't respond at all because they don't want to get caught up in communication with potential confusion. Other teams, based on the specific kind of motion, might have an adjustment that they've practiced all week. So one way or the other, you're giving more information to Brock Purdy before the snap of the ball, and that's what you're always trying to do with a quarterback, is give him as much information before the ball is snapped as possible.
Greg, I'd love to ask you about Juwan Jennings, who's also going to return this week, and his role has sort of been one thing through his career, and then all of a sudden, because of injuries and whatnot early in the year, he started to show people a different level of productivity. What did you see early in this year from Juwan that maybe you didn't know he had in him?
Well, I wouldn't say I didn't know that he had it in him, because I remember doing him and evaluating his tape when he came out of Tennessee, and I really, really liked him as a player. What hurt him was the fact that he ran something like a 4.74 40, so right away that dropped him in the eyes of scouts, evaluators, and coaches as someone who, hey, really good player, physical, competitive, tough, but how many 4.74 wide receivers play in the NFL? So he's not a surprise to me, because he was in the SEC and he was a really, really good receiver, super competitive, super tough. You know, his game's obviously not built on speed, but that's okay. I mean, you know, there are very few receivers whose games are truly built on speed. So he's always been a physical, tough competitor who can work between the numbers, and he's with a team who the foundation of the passing game is working between the numbers.
And you look at this offense now with Ricky Pearsall emerging, and Brandon Ayuk, of course, is out. When you go to a three-receiver set with Pearsall and Juwan and Debo, who works better in the slot from what you've seen on film?
Well, I think, you know, ultimately that's where Jennings has probably played the most, but I would say that this is an offense based on the use of motion, based on the fact that there's so many tight or reduced splits where the receivers are closer to the offensive tackles or the tight end. You know, I think all of them could technically work in the slot. I don't think this is an offense that's built around you have one guy who lines up at the X, one guy who lines up at the Z, one guy who plays in the slot. I don't think the offense is built that way. So I think you're dealing with three guys that could essentially line up anywhere and that can all be used as motion players.
Greg Cosell with us, senior producer NFL Films, every week on Willard and Dibbs. Greg, we want to ask you some things about the Tampa Bay Bucs for sure.
Sure.
You know, someone who I respect in the league said to me that right now this is not a very good defense, the Bucs. I wonder what's your evaluation of them right now?
Well, they're kind of hurting at the corner position for sure, because right now they're starting two corners who, you know, I don't think ultimately they wanted to be starting. They play McCollum, and now they're down to their third corner opposite him in Hayes. So they're the outside corners for the Bucs. Smith, a rookie from Georgia, is the slot corner. I personally don't think that he's a slot corner in the NFL, but, you know, others obviously disagree. So I think they're hurting at the corner position. You know, I think at linebacker, they're telling you that next to Levante David, they're uncertain as to that player, because they were playing Britt quite a bit. And then over this past week, and I think even the week before, they started playing a free agent named Russell. I believe he's a free agent, J.J. Russell. So they're telling you by what they're doing at that spot next to David that they're searching for someone who, in their mind, can do the job. And in their front, they don't truly have an edge pass rusher. They've got Vita Vea, who's obviously a really dominant force inside. They've got a second-year player, Kalijah Kancey, who's got tremendous quickness and can rush the quarterback. But on the edge, they're struggling on the edge.
And when you look at Vita Vea in the middle, and he's such a great nose tackle, and he's going to absorb the double team each and every time, what do you do offensively to sort of counteract what he can do as a space eater in the middle?
Well, then it comes down to the types of blocks that you deploy. There'll be angle blocks. There'll be double teams. You know, that's all built into every run game. So, you know, you're probably not going to block him a lot one-on-one. My guess is they're not going to have the center block him one-on-one. So, but you can take care of that with the way you structure your run game. So he's a really good player, and he'll make some plays, but my guess is he's not going to wreck the 49ers offense.
Greg, how have the Bucs done in handling the loss of their two best wide receivers in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin so far?
Well, I think they're the receivers that they're putting out there now, they don't really have a whole lot of verticality to their offense. Trey Palmer can run, but, you know, he's not a great receiver, but he certainly can run. So, you know, what they're putting out there now is a bunch of guys who are kind of short to short intermediate receivers. Their wide receiver rotation had guys you probably haven't heard a lot of. They have a kid named Rakeem Jarrett who played at Maryland. They have a free agent named Miller who played at Furman. Obviously, you know Sterling Shepard, he's been in the league, and they've got Palmer. This past week, Jarrett, the free agent from Maryland, played the most snaps of the quartet. But it was clear watching that tape that they don't really have an intermediate and true vertical dimension to their pass game, so it's somewhat condensed.
When you look at the run game, and the Niners have had some trouble against the ground game so far this year, Rashad White, Bucky Irving, if he plays, how much of a threat do they pose against a Niner run defense that has been, at times, vulnerable?
Well, they've got three backs that they play. They play Rashad White, they play Irving, and then they also play Sean Tucker, who came out of Syracuse a few years ago. And, you know, these guys all have ability. I mean, Tucker and Irving are both explosive-type backs that you have to be careful. They can create bigger plays. But their run game has been pretty good, quite frankly, over the last 5 or 6 weeks. They play a lot relative to the rest of the NFL of what we call the pony package, in which they play two running backs. So in other words, it's 21 personnel, meaning two backs and a tight end, but the two backs are halfbacks.
Greg, what's your assessment so far this year of the play of Baker Mayfield, who always seems the last few years to sort of be sneaky in terms of how well he's playing when no one's expecting him to?
Well, I would say in the league, he's probably thought of pretty well. I mean, he's at his core, he's a pocket quarterback. He's got a good arm. You know, I think he sees the field well. He's willing to make difficult throws. Every once in a while, he'll make a throw that, you know, he throws the ball into coverage or forces a ball because by nature, he's aggressive, turning it loose. But Baker's a good quarterback. And, you know, his arm is if you talk to coaches and players, they'll tell you his arm's really good. He can make throws. They just are somewhat limited in what they could do with their pass game because of what they're lacking on the outside. But Baker Mayfield's a good NFL quarterback.
And you look at their offensive line, Greg, and I see four of the five who were drafted either in the first or the second round. How do you think of this unit as a five-man group trying to protect Baker without the weapons they have outside?
Yeah, it's not a bad group at all. Obviously, the left tackle, Wirtz, is a really, really good player, probably one of the better left tackles in the league. They drafted Graham Barton in the first round this year, who was a tackle at Duke, but they've moved him to center. You know, he's a rookie, but he's a solid player. So it's a solid O-line. You know, it's not a weakness per se. My guess is, you know, with the right tackle, Gadecki, that they'll put Bosa predominantly on him, and I think that'll be a good matchup for Bosa. You know, the two guards at times can struggle in pass protection, so we'll see how they choose to attack that. But I think the two guards, not necessarily a weakness, but not a strength.
Greg, I get what you're saying about putting Bosa on the other side, but in the past there have been kind of some one-on-one matchups between Nick Bosa and Tristan Wirfs, who are two of the best at their positions. If we see that some this weekend, how would you sort of handicap that matchup? What can you tell us about their tendencies?
Yeah, well, don't forget, Wirfs started his career as a right tackle in the league, and he just moved to left tackle, I think, last year, if memory serves me correctly. So he's played right tackle, I think, his first 2 years in the league because he came out in 20, and I'm pretty sure in 20 and 21 he was their right tackle, and then in 22 and maybe 3 years, but because we're now in 24, but I think he's played left tackle the last 2 years. So he's gone against him. Wirfs is really good. I mean, that's one of those really good matchups where Wirfs is going to win some and Bosa is going to win some. Wirfs is really strong. He's got really light feet. He's just a really good tackle. So, you know, you're going to expect that that he's going to win some one-on-one matchups.
Charvarius Ward not expected to play after the family tragedy in the game on Sunday. What does that do, in your opinion, for the 49ers with a secondary of mostly younger and inexperienced players? How have they looked so far this year, Greg?
Well, I think Renardo Green has showed really well, so he's obviously going to, I assume he's going to start now. So you're going to have, you know, I guess Yodam is going to play, right? He'll be the other corner on the outside. I mean, when they go to nickel.
Lenore,
but you're right. Yodam will probably move back into the lineup a little bit more than he had been, yeah.
Yeah, I would assume Lenore will, if they're playing base, I assume Lenore will be on the outside as he always is in base. The question is, who's going to play opposite him in base? Will it be Yodam or Green? I guess, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that. But, you know, when they go nickel, obviously Lenore will move inside to the slot. But, I mean, Green has played well. I think he's going to be a really good player. Yodam's been a guy that's been in the league, and, you know, he's been with a number of teams, but, you know, he's now been in the league a long time, so teams obviously think you can line up and play with him.
Greg, I like, you're free on this one to be like, I have no idea, Mark, but I want to ask you, because the Niners just acquired someone at the deadline, do you have any intel on Khalil Davis, the inside tackle that they got from Houston this week?
Yeah, he was a rotational tackle with Houston. You know, I think that's what he is, and I think he's really good in that role. Like, he's not a guy you'd put out there for 45 or 50 snaps. You know, I've seen him with Houston. He shows up on film. He flashes. He's got pretty good quickness. You know, that will be his role with the Niners. He'll be a rotational player. That's why they got him. They wanted more depth. You know, obviously Hargrave's done for the year, so they're looking for depth at that position. I think that's what he is. You know, when you get a guy like that, you're getting him because you know what he is, and you're getting him for a specific reason, and that's the reason.
And when you look at the Niners so far through 8 games on film in the interior defensive line, where do you see their problems or their weaknesses against the run and or the pass?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, call it weakness. I mean, you have to be careful about, you know, if a team runs the ball, you know, in a given week, you don't, you know, I have this conversation so often, you know, with different people when I do stuff. We live in a social media world where, quite frankly, everybody is trying to make evaluations week to week. And you can't really do that. You know, there's 17 games. It's the NFL. You know, sometimes guys don't play great in a given week. It doesn't mean they're no good. Sometimes a team doesn't play well in a specific area in a given week. It doesn't mean that they're bad at that. You know, for instance, I'll give you an example. We've talked about Devondre Campbell a number of times over, you know, since we started talking, and there's been plays where he's not been very good at all. There's also been plays where he's been very good. So you just have to be careful. I mean, this is a defense that has a pretty good front. You know, it's, can they get beat at times inside? It's one reason why they went out and got Khalil Davis, because they probably don't want to play Jordan Elliott as many snaps as they've had to play him, because he's not that guy. So they're looking for more players. But they're not a weak defense.
Greg, when you look at what's coming back, and Dre Greenlaw maybe soon, but not yet, but the expectation this week is, at least on the offensive side, Christian McCaffrey and Juwan Jennings are going to be back. And the 49er fan base kind of has this vibe of, like, coming out of the bye, the cavalry is coming back, we're going to look really different this week. Is that fair? Do you expect this offense with those two additions to really kind of jump up a few notches?
Well, I think the one thing we don't know is how much McCaffrey will play.
Yep.
You know, is he going to play 60 snaps? Is he going to play 20 snaps? I mean, we're talking on a Thursday. I don't know what his status is. Do you guys happen to know, has he been a full go in practice?
No, he's been a limited go. The only thing that we have, and this is completely unofficial, but Richard Sherman did say that he spoke directly to Christian last week, and that Christian said they've been very cautious. He already was ready to go. And so they're just playing it cool, but that he expects potentially a significant role this weekend.
Well, I mean, if they've been giving him, you know, an extra 2-3 weeks for that reason, which in my view is smart, then maybe he is going to play 40 or 50 snaps. And I would expect their offense, you know, don't forget, they've still run the ball well. Now, he's obviously arguably the best back in the league when healthy. So, you know, he's a better player than Mason and Garrido. But I don't think the offense in terms of approach, in terms of running the football, you know, how much they run it is necessarily going to change. It may look different because of the motions, you know, different looks, but it's not as if all of a sudden they're going to run the ball 80% of their plays. They're a running team. You know, Mason, until he got hurt, was up among the league leaders, if not leading the league in number of carries. So it's, you know, that's not going to change. They're going to be a running football team to start. You're asking if there's going to be better production. Now, Mason gave you a lot of production as well. So, you know, it's not as if the production's going to double.
Right, but I wonder about the production in the red zone because they were number one last year, and this year
they're
bottom five. Does the McCaffrey presence give them that versatility that they need?
Yes, and you know, teams normally that are really good in the red zone, normally, nothing's 100% in the league, but normally they can run the ball, you know, really well, particularly when you get into the low red zone, meaning inside the 10-yard line. And that's where McCaffrey gives them something that they don't have.
Greg, great stuff, man. Here we go, coming out of the bye week and the back stretch, and this is where Kyle Shanahan has really succeeded in his history. So we look forward to talking to you throughout.
Yeah, and they got some tough ones coming up. I mean, they got Seattle, Green Bay, Buffalo. I mean, it'll be an interesting schedule.
Yes.
You know, this is a tough game. I mean, they're on the road. This is almost a must-win game.
Oh.
Yeah,
you hear that, Dibs?
Don't say. He said almost.
Almost.
Thank you for couching it, Greg.
I mean, just because the schedule's hard.
Yes.
It is.
I mean,
but, you know,
look,
Greg,
this
you
is a team when they
like
play
really analytical, and I'm very strict about my use of the phrase must win. That's all.
Well, I mean, you know, look, must win, you know. Look, if they go to four, they're 4-4, right?
Yep.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, obviously no one wants to go to 4-5 if you're 4-4, but they've got a challenging schedule. In other words, they don't have the games you look and you go, boy, that's going to be a win, you know, just pretty much. They don't have those kinds of games coming up.
You're exactly right. I mean, trips to Buffalo, trip to Green Bay, the Lions are still on the schedule. You're right, Greg. Great to talk to you as always.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Greg.
We'll talk to you soon. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Greg Cosell says this is a must-win this weekend.
No, that's not what he said. And for you to corrupt the words of my dear friend Greg Cosell is not only erroneous, but it, quite frankly, it's hurtful. He said almost must-win, which, honestly, is it's kind of a milquetoast thing to say.
Wow.
It's a must win.
Why don't you say that
either,
to his face?
That's why I stopped him and corrected him.
But you didn't call him milquetoast.
I said that phrase, almost must win, is a red herring.
Right.
It's a non sequitur because it's either a must win or it's not a must win. Must win is a black and white construct.
Well,
you get that, right?
I get that, but do you get that must can lead to or refer to anything? I mean, even if you lose a must-win game, it's not like you die. Like, must what? He might be saying this is a must-win for them to, and then fill in the blank.
Right,
but this is a must-win for them to not be 4-5.
But you understand that the phrase must-win pertains to make the playoffs or don't make the playoffs.
Lucas, game show music, please, if you would. Game show music. Thank you very much. There are three quarterbacks in the NFL this year who have already thrown their 20th touchdown pass. Dibs, three quarterbacks, 20 or more touchdown passes. Can you name them?
Jeez, man, we're halfway through the year. 20 or more. Man, I'd have to dig deep and think about who's had monster games. I know who it isn't, and one of whom it isn't is Patrick Mahomes. Mr. Special, Mr. Everything himself. I know it's none of my fantasy quarterbacks, which include Stafford, Goff, and Stroud.
This is a hell of a filibuster right now.
Well, I'm trying to work my way through it.
Okay.
I would guess one of them would be not Joe Burrow. Man, this is hard. Josh Allen would be a guess.
Nope. Josh Allen has 17.
Okay.
That's a no.
Boy, I don't know, Mark.
All three of them are appropriate for the conversation today. How about that?
That means they're all not very good, or they've all... I mean, the conversation for today is like...
Are you waving a white flag?
I mean, I could keep guessing, but we're up against it.
We kind of are. You know,
you set me up to fail.
No,
what
I didn't.
Happened.
No, I didn't. You can guess. You just didn't get any of them. Yeah, that's not. So, you know who's leading the NFL in touchdown passes is Baker Mayfield.
Oh, there you go.
Baker Mayfield has 23, and the other two who have 20 are about to play in a Fade the Dibbers contest.
All right, Lamar.
Coming up here in about an hour. The Fade the Dibbers in an hour. The game's in an hour and a half. Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson.
Joe Burrow's got 20. Wow.
Joe Burrow.
Okay. Lamar, you're front runner for the MVP again.
Easily. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Okay, check this out. Back to the Warriors. What has changed the Warriors is the question we're asking at 888-957-9570. But we need to throw into the mix what Brian Windhorst said about a potential Warriors trade. That is coming up next, Jay Billis in a half hour, Willard and Dibbs.
Gary, it's Lucas. Hey, pleasure talking to you. I've noticed that even when you're wide open going for dunks, you love to do reverse dunks, coming down, cutting down the baseline. It seems like 90% of your dunks are reverse. What's the deal with that?
It's a good question, Lucas. That's a good question. Well,
Gary, was it actually a good question, or were you just being nice because it was Lucas jumping in?
No, that's a good question.
Okay. All right. I'm just checking.
Well, you know, that counts for something on our show
it
now,
does,
Gary.
Yeah.
You just gave him the biggest compliment that could be paid in this program.
He's like celebrating in the other room right now.
No, that was a great question. Great question.
All right.
Now you're piling on.
Hey, Dub Nation. It's GP2 here. Willard and Dibs is live on YouTube and Twitch right now. Time for you to like and subscribe.
That was like Ruben Boomshay Boomshay. Did you notice he said it twice every single time?
Johnny, that's two
good,
times.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. And then at the end, he's like, it's a great question. It's a great question. And then I like what you said, where you're like, now stop.
Yeah.
Like,
that's, you're just piling on
I
now.
Mean,
yeah.
And I love that. Thank you for spending time during our show cutting up yourself and replaying it on the air. I hope you enjoyed that.
I did. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's great. That's good work.
And I told him in real time through the talk back where we can talk to the people in the other room, I said, career highlight. And he nodded vigorously.
Big deal, right? Active Warrior gives you six that's a good or that's a great questions. And I think it's also, correct me, the only question that you've ever asked one of our guests, at least on the air.
Like I have before, but
have you ever done that before?
First in a long time.
Yeah.
One for one?
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Damn. I'd walk it off if I were you.
Think I'll retire now.
Yeah, just leave.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, doors
pretty
that
strong.
Way.
And as good as the question was, and it was good, the answer was even better. Basically, he does it so that he can find his man on defense more quickly.
He's like, I won't be able to see. I don't want to turn my back on the game. Did you buy that answer, or is he hot-dogging and didn't want to say it?
Coming from him, yes.
Okay.
Because I could see him going up, about to dunk, and thinking, where's my man? I better reverse dunk. That way I can go ahead and play defense quicker.
I mean, that is
how
his brain works.
He's a different dude, yes.
Yeah, he is. He's very much a different dude.
So coming from him, I'm buying it.
There's a little showboating in there.
A little bit.
There's a little bit of showboating.
But if you
which is fine, by the way.
If you watch him dunk, he doesn't often go like high above the rim, elevation sensation. He gets to the rim slightly above, and he efficiently dunks the basketball, and then he goes and plays defense.
Yeah.
So it's not like I go up and I dunk it, and I'm going to swing, slap the glass, and then preen and pose. He dunks and defends.
By the way, if you missed the GP2 conversation, it was great, and you can check it out, Odyssey app, YouTube. There was another answer he gave that I wanted to circle back to, and then we'll get to your Warrior calls, 888-957-9570. What do you think has changed the Warriors this year? I asked him, I go, dude, you're a defensive guy. You guys were not good on defense last year, and now you are. So, like, what gives? What happened? And in that answer, two to three times, you know who he referenced? DeAnthony Melton. He's like, well, Melt, really good. He's not playing, Gary.
Right.
He's barely played. So that's awesome that the Warriors are about to basically activate another very good defender. And that is as advertised. He's advertised as a good defender. But I would argue that's not what's making you a better defensive team this year because he's not playing.
It's that Melt mentality is okay. What it is. You know, Melt set a tone from Hawaii all the way back.
I like the Melt.
I do too.
You ever eaten there?
It's funny you say that because one of the things I would do with my kids when I would go there and they ask you for your initials so that they can, you know.
They do?
What you do is you order at the Melt and they say, can I have your initials? And or they say, can I have your name? And then that way when they call it out by your initials.
By your initials.
And so I would always tell them that my name is Frank Underwood. So then my sandwich would be ready and they'd be like, sandwich for F you? F you!
You have.
F you! Your sandwich is ready.
Who's more mature?
My kids would be so embarrassed.
You or your two-year-old? Who is more mature?
It's a coin toss.
Hey,
and you should see us when I get home. And the two of us slapping it around like a couple of three-year-olds. But my kids at the time were teenagers. And I would say, put that under Frank Underwood. And they'd be like, F you! Your sandwich is ready. Hey, F you! And I'd say, F me, yeah. F you.
Really sounds like a sandwich shot in Philadelphia.
Dude, my kids were so embarrassed, dude.
That's good.
Who wants to say F you?
Your initials are already a thing.
Yeah,
designated driver.
Well, that's not what I think of when I think about Double D.
Like I said.
I mean, what's wrong with you?
I mean, your maturity.
The fact that you went to designated driver.
I mean,
are you a priest? What is wrong with you?
Speaking of priests, they're not too old. Some of our listeners got that, and most of you didn't. But we're looking for you, Priest. Do you have the clip somewhere in there, Lucas?
They're too old.
Or are you too busy cutting clips of yourself to share on the air?
And posting videos of me being like...
Well, that was funny. Where can we find that, by the way?
All of our socials.
All
it is everywhere now.
Okay.
Your boy got clowned.
Dan Dibley, also known as FU.
Frank Underwood.
And people should know how this came to be. I'm arriving today, and I'm literally about to walk into the doors of our office. And I hear from across the street, "Hey, Willard!" And I'm like, "All right, we got a drunk listener." And
I had to say it twice.
Right, and I turn around, and no, we don't have a drunk listener. We have Dibs in a freaking sailor cap on... In the middle of the street.
Maiden Lane.
In the middle of the street. I'm like, what the hell is going on out here?
And we all waved you over because you needed to see what was about to go down.
Director of sports and America's favorite interviewer, Lucas Alexander, is over there.
And the director of water.
Yes. And Ridley Sandretto, who runs our digital and is fantastic, is also over there. And she's got a tripod with the phone on it and got extra phones on it. And you're like over there in a t-shirt. A sailor cap and not really a lot else.
Shorts.
Shorts.
Barefoot.
From across the street, I'm like, Skivvies, what are you doing over there? Like, what is happening right now?
What are you doing?
So and there's a bucket. That's the only other thing. There's a bucket. And when I got there, you asked me, you go, are you familiar with, and what did you call it? It wasn't the ice bucket challenge.
No, it's, I believe, the splash challenge, yeah. Right?
The splash challenge. And I'm like, no, I'm not familiar with that because I don't think that's a thing.
I wasn't familiar either until 2 days ago when, look, our boss said, I have an idea. You stand there and we throw water on you. It'll be great.
So it's not a thing. It's just something that y'all made up.
It's actually a thing.
It's a TikTok trend.
It's a TikTok trend.
It's a TikTok trend. Got it. Okay. The splash challenge.
So I told him, let's do it yesterday. And then Whitley, director of social media, was a no-show. And I thought, cool, I'm off the hook. And I walk in today early like an idiot. And here she is. And she says, oh, we can still do it today.
We could do it.
And I said, well, I happen to still have my change of clothes with me. Let's do this thing.
And what, like, you have the yellow gold-blooded...
Warriors, Warriors, Warriors.
Yeah, it says Warriors.
Yep.
Right?
From the Western Conference Finals series against Dallas years ago.
You cut basically what amounts to a promo for the game next Tuesday, Clay back in town, but you did so while being doused 4 different times by a bucket of water.
It should have been once, but director of sports has very limited bucket water throwing skill.
That's true. He had
to continually try to pepper me with water.
Well, the funniest part was is 3 throws of water, and he looks down, and there's still water in there.
Maybe an ounce.
so mad.
And he had to get that on me,
somebody
too.
He fires it, but there's so little that it just kind of does like this little through the air and kind of lands on your feet. And you look at him and you're like, four was unnecessary. Like in the middle of the promo. It's very, very amusing. So this is all over all of our digital platforms.
Twitter, yeah. Instagram, TikTok.
Twitter, Instagram, TikTok.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing to you.
I think it's funny, and it's hard to embarrass me, and I did this voluntarily. Like, rubbing Lorenzo Neal's feet for 10 minutes live on the air was worse than getting a bucket of water thrown on me.
No, I get that, but my point is, for the viewers and listeners, you should go, like, it's funny.
I think it's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
You should check it out.
You should.
Have you seen this still picture? Have they sent you that yet?
Oh, no. No, but I look skinny because I'm recoiling because it's so cold.
I'll show it to YouTube and Twitch, and if you're not watching right now, you can just go check it out on social channels. But it's one of those still pictures where your eyes are closed and your mouth is making a completely funny look, and you are getting, like, it looks like water is coming from every single angle.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was. And so as we're shooting this, Lucas, director of water, says, are you ready? And I'm thinking, how do you get ready to have a gigantic bucket of water hurled at you in the middle of a street in San Francisco? There's no getting ready for it.
Sure there is.
Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Throw the damn thing.
Did you do the ice bucket challenge when that thing happened a few years ago?
Yep.
Well, it was a lot of years ago.
A lot of years ago.
That was probably like 8 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say 6 years ago. Yep. Definitely pre-pandemic.
Pre-TikTok, too.
Yeah.
I think.
I would guess 2018 might be earlier than that, but I did that.
Actually, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm 100% sure it was earlier than 2018.
You were still down south?
Yeah, well, we were three houses away from moving up north.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember where we did it. We did it on the front lawn in the kids.
Wow, Mark. Yeah. 2014.
There you go. It was a decade ago.
Dude.
I know. They go fast. Especially when you're underwater like you.
Yeah, that was a couple kids ago.
So, anyway.
A couple marriages ago.
Well, anyway.
Anyhow.
First of all, I'd like to pass along to everybody that you're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey.